Moving abroad isn't just for the rich and famous. It is not always the glamorous life that so many people think that it is. Regular people can make this happen too. That's what we're going to talk about in this episode of Not Your Average Globetrotter. And we're going to go over my method of what I look at when I move abroad to a different country. I haven't just lived in Italy. There have been other countries along this 12-year path. Anyway, a huge thank you to the patrons and other supporters who make content like this possible on a regular basis. Just before we get into this episode, also a comment question of the week. What are some of the things that you look into when you're moving abroad? Hello there and welcome to another Friday night for another episode of Not Your Average Globetrotter. I'm Rafael Di Furia, and like I said in the intro, we are going to be talking about moving abroad and some of what I think is necessary when moving abroad and when thinking about it, when planning out what may or may not possible, because there is a lot of research involved to figure out if it even is possible for you to go to a new country to live that life that you've been looking for. Something that I've done for myself, as well as actually for others, is I put together a location report, or at least what I call a location report, that brings together all the different information that is necessary for me to know about what really makes a difference in my life abroad. I'm going to go through a couple of different points, and I've got seven of them here just on my screen in front of me, of some of the things that I think about, that I look into, that can make some of the biggest differences when living abroad. This is tailored to myself and what I need, but you can take some of these things, modify them, and just move forward with what would be necessary for you. Those daily things that you realize are important for you. After living in a number of different countries, I've seen what are the similarities and differences that I look for and that are necessary for me to consider if I am going to a different country. But it's something I haven't really gone into here on Not Your Average Globetrotter, and I thought I may as well just do that now. Anyway, moving abroad isn't just for the rich and famous, the wealthy, the glamorous life livers. It can be for the regular average person. And something that I'm always inspired by is the stories of my family members who came to the United States, who left their lives behind to start something new. In particular, there are two people that, I mean, they were all inspiring, but two people really stand out to me. One I've mentioned here on episodes of Not Your Average Globetrotter was one of my great-grandparents, one of my great-grandfathers who came to America literally with nothing. He had just enough for the ticket to leave his country and come over to the United States in the early 1900s. Somebody gave him an apple. Instead of eating that apple, he sold that apple, bought two apples. With those two apples, he kept on going forward. Eventually, he had a fruit cart. Eventually, he had a store. And from that store, he built up to a whole block of stores in Boston. He lost everything, but was then able to build his life up again. And that, to me, is so inspiring that somebody who came from almost nothing, came to a new country, built their life up, lost everything, and then built it up again. That's inspiring. To come to build a personal empire from an apple. Can you believe that? And then even my own father, he left his country in search of a better life and to make a new life in the United States. It's not where he ended up settling, but it's something that I do find inspiring, that it's not just one side of my family. All sides of my family have had these individuals who were adventurous, who wanted to do something different in a different country. It could have been for better opportunities, better life, or just a different life. Moving abroad isn't just one thing. But then also you have to consider that moving abroad isn't just simply moving abroad, just simply arriving someplace. Yes, it is something that people do. And I will admit, I can almost understand why there are people who do make the choice to relocate to a place in a less than legal way. If you are going to be moving abroad, though, you have to consider, of course, are you going to be doing this legally or illegally? If you are moving to a country legally, then you have certain protections in place. You may have guarantees that you could probably be in the country for X period of time as long as you don't break the law, get thrown in jail, and so on, and to be able to potentially build a life for yourself. But of course, it will depend on the type of visa. If you have an educational visa, there are some countries that will allow that to be converted into a work visa. There are other countries that don't allow. There are some countries that only allow certain types of educational visas to be able to do this. This is something that I've done in my life, where I went to a country, had a visa to study, ended up turning that into a work visa, lived there for a while. And it's not an easy process. But is it doable? Yeah. But then there, of course, are the less than legal ways of moving abroad. And when you do that, there are certain trade-offs that may come along with it. You won't have certain protections available to you, potentially social services, medical services, whatever it may be, may or may not be available to you. There may be some countries where you could go to the hospital, but then you may be reported. Or there may be other countries where you could go to the hospital, but not have to be worried about being reported. It's a very difficult weight to live with on your shoulders that at any time, what you have built up in a new place could literally be ripped away from you at any moment and you would be sent back to wherever it is that you're from. I mean, even earlier this year, or maybe the end of last year, I reactivated Tinder for a little while and matched with a young American woman. And she said, oh, she didn't care. She's just going to stay in the country until she gets kicked out. I mean, that's quite a mindset right there. And unfortunately, I would argue that it's people like that who do lead to a more difficult situation for some other people who maybe more genuinely need the assistance and help to live in a different country. I'm not saying that that's necessarily something that should or shouldn't be done, but that's also something to be taken into consideration is if a person does arrive illegally in a country, what their path to becoming legal might be. A lot of parts of the world have no legal path to citizenship for somebody who is an illegal immigrant. And again, with some of the difficulties and the complications of legally going through the process, I could say that I might understand why somebody might choose to move forward in that path if it's the only thing that they think that they can do. This leads me into point one of what I look for in my list of things when I would make this location report for myself. Or for others that I've done, but what are your legal options to stay in this place that you're looking at? And you may not want to be sold on just one place. You may want to have your top tier choice, your second, third, and fourth, maybe fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. Because you have an interest in a country doesn't mean that you will be able to stay there. There are plenty of countries that I had thought about going to, but based on my circumstances at the time, I didn't have the ability to make that work for me. And this is where I do say that, yes, some dual citizens in the world may have an advantage over people when it comes to freedom of movement and relocation. Especially if you have an EU passport, then this opens up the European Union. Although that comes with a little bit of a caveat that, yes, you can move around and travel freely, but to reside in a place, you still have to register, and some countries do have financial requirements for a person that wants to live there, or at least the ability to support themselves without being reliant on the social system of that country. So if you are interested in Europe, the first thing that you should look into is, who are your ancestors? Where did they come from? How long ago did they come from there? A number of countries in Europe do offer citizenship to people of descent for certain groups of people. If you're of Hungarian descent, Italian descent, Irish descent, or even if you are a Sephardic, Portuguese, or Spanish Jew, and your family came from Iberia even hundreds of years ago, that may lead to a path for citizenship for you to be able to live in Iberia or anywhere else in Europe. Some of the systems are much more open, some of them are much more closed, but then what are the other options available to you? If you're a freelancer, there are some countries that do take that into consideration. And some of those countries will allow you, just simply as a freelancer, to be able to reside there and take that into account as if you had created a larger company or business. But then there are other countries where for you to be able to stay there, you'd have to create a company. And of course, these things aren't cheap. Being a freelancer usually is a little bit less expensive. And this is the thing. If you are thinking about moving abroad, in this day and age, especially with how much more prevalent remote working has become, this is a crazy opportunity that you have to be able to maximize on that. That you, if you don't have to go into an office or you have the flexibility to not go there if you so choose, then why do you have to be where you are? If you are able to earn a living, why not live in a place that maybe would have a lower cost of living than where you're from? That might not even mean that you have to leave your country, but why not live in a cheaper part of the world? And so this kind of leads me into my second point that I look into, taxation. When you are living in another country, depending on your nationality, especially for Americans, you may have to be concerned about double taxation, or if there is a treaty in place, or if you have investments, what do capital gains taxes look like? I, for better or for worse, that's something that I've never had to deal with. But there are, even if you're in crypto, for example, there are countries that see crypto as just regular money, and they don't look at it as something that you'd have to pay financial gains tax on. You'll have to look at what the rules are based on how it is that you're earning money. If you're earning money from, say, investments in property, or you're just earning money from working freelance online, this is something that you'll have to take into account. I highly, highly, highly recommend contacting an English-speaking accountant, because that will clarify the situation. You could look online and get a lot of information, but maybe there might be some not loophole, but a way of moving through the system that would allow you to potentially lower your taxes or to pay at least something reasonable. Another factor that people also don't take into consideration is that, say, they have a job in their country of origin that they will be still continuing to work from. There are some countries in the world where if you are physically within the country doing the work, that is enough to make you liable for taxes. So those are some rules that you really do need to understand what is in place and what's at play. And this is all within kind of the cost of living, but another cost of living that I think is very important to look at is transportation. Do you want to have a car? Do you not want to have a car? I know for me, I haven't wanted to have a car and haven't wanted to have the need of a car. So that has limited my searches for places to live in to certain areas, to be in a place that is accessible, that maybe I can walk to stores or walk to public transportation or have access to things without the need of a car. And this is something I'll talk about a little bit later also on in this episode, about even, for example, ordering things online. And then also, depending on the type of work that you do or how connected you are to your home country, how important is it to have an airport not far away? How important is it to have the ability to easily get there or maybe be in between a few different airports? Like, for example, where I live, I have the option to go to, say, about 4 airports, all roughly the similar distance from one another. 3 of them are much easier to get to than the 4th one. But from where I live, for example, I can walk to the train station, hop on a train, get to Bologna, and take transport from the train station to the airport there, which is very easy. I have multiple options. So if I found that there was a cheaper flight going from one of these other airports, I could potentially make that work. Or worst case scenario, 3 hours from where I live, and I can get to Rome. So it's good to have these options available to you. You never know if you're going to need to travel for work or travel for a family emergency. And this is another thing when taking into account transportation, having a car or taking buses, trains, trams, metros, taxis, whatever it may be, you need to start thinking about, what are these monthly costs going to be? How often are you going to need them? Are you going to be needing to drive every day? Are you going to need to take taxis every day? Which that could add up hugely over a very short period of time. Although there are some parts of the world where taxis are supposed to be very cheap. Or if you're going to need public transportation, look into the cost of, what does a single ticket cost? What does a monthly ticket cost? Or if you have a reloadable card, does that give you a discount on those single trips? It's important to understand all of these aspects. And then if you are having a car, what is the cost of fuel or what is the cost of insurance? These are very important to understand. And kind of moving actually towards point 4, because it's related to the transportation, is where you're going to live, which I kind of spoke about in point 3. But the location, location, location is always the most important thing. Do you need to be near a city center, or do you want to live a little further out and have more space? Maybe having a car would make it not only more realistic, but more practical if you're living out in the countryside, you have a car and you have some space, that might make that lifestyle a bit more practical. Whereas if you don't have a car and you don't want a car, living out in the country may not be the best choice for you. Maybe if you're in some near a small town, you can ride a bike in, but do you want to have to do that even if it's raining and maybe carrying heavy groceries and so on? I mean, you could always get a trailer for a bike and so on, but these are things to consider, because also the trade-off for a life without a car is that maybe you might have to live closer to a city center or to an area that offers more. Of course, these will be more desirable areas that will more often than not come with higher costs for the rentals. Not every place, and sometimes what may be considered higher locally is only relative to everything else there, and where you come from, it might be significantly less than what it would cost there. So maybe you're paying $2,000 in rent to live where you are currently right now, but if you wanted to move to a small town in the center, maybe you might be able to find something for $300 to $800. Or if you want to live out in the countryside and have your car, maybe between $200 and $600. Of course, this depends on what part of the world that you even want to move to. And then sometimes even within a country, like Italy, for example, the prices change drastically depending on where you are and how well connected it is. Of course, also again, just like when dealing with finances, especially for your first time renting in a new country, I highly recommend, especially if you don't speak the language, to have an English-speaking real estate agent there with you who can translate and interpret and make sure that everything happens the way that it's supposed to happen, and fighting for you and not necessarily for the real estate owner, to have your own person, even if you have to pay them extra. Yes, this can be costly, but in some countries, this is how it works, where maybe two agents will do a deal together. So it's great to have somebody who's on your side, and especially you want to know what these contracts are saying. If you're getting into a contract, especially 6 months, 12 months, or like you might find in Italy, 3 years plus 2 years, 4 years plus 4 years, you want to know very well, what are your responsibilities? What are their responsibilities? What's the access to the apartment like? Does it come with storage? Does it come with parking? If they're trying to sell the apartment, do you have to let them in? What are your rights? Because also, depending on the country, yeah, they may want to sell the apartment, but they might not legally have the right to enter whenever they want, and they may have to give you notice. And then some places, the law may be that they only have to give you a reasonable amount of notice, but they still have to be given access. Or are they going to come at 12 at night? Or are they going to come at 6 in the morning? These are details that you want to make sure that you have completely ironed out and fully understood, that would be at least in a manner that you could live with. Because also, the other aspect is that you're coming from a country, you may not be able to approach things the same way that you would there. If you're from the United States, for example, it's very difficult to come with an American mindset and approach the Italian system. There are certain things that just don't work the same and that you'll get extremely frustrated if you try to do. But it's also important to understand what is the Italian system so that you know at least a little bit better how to navigate it. And another important aspect when we're talking about location actually takes me into point five that I have. And that's not just the connectivity to other cities, airports, to be able to get around, but how well is it connected to even the internet? Cellular service, home internet service. Do you need these things? Do you want these things? Is it a part of the world that has 5G, 4G LTE, 3G, or 2G? Like, or is there even a signal available that you would be able to get at home? Or do you need a home internet connection? Do you need 2 gigabit speeds, or is 30 megabytes okay enough for you? You need to understand what are these things that are available to you, especially if you're going to be working from home. And if internet is important for that job, then it's important to understand how much is going to be that monthly contract and what do you need to be able to get that monthly contract? Because in some parts of the world, even like Italy, you can't get a monthly contract unless you have a bank account or a credit card. And sometimes having the credit card necessitates the bank account, because in Italy, they don't do credit scores. Credit is based on the contract that you have for work. And so even if you may have a lot of money in the bank, that may take into question what you may be able to do as far as getting a credit card out here. And especially in a world where we can be connected and stay in touch with some of our friends and families back in the old country, you can keep up with them. You can have that contact. And maybe you live on a different side of the country from your family anyway, and you get in contact through WhatsApp or FaceTime or Skype, Zoom, whatever it may be. You could still have that same ability to be in contact with them the same way as before, maybe just a little further away, maybe a couple borders in between. But for some people, that might not be something that would really drastically affect their life. Some people can, in fact, live with the place just as the background to their life. I mean, I realize this very much goes against what I've said in recent episodes, and I don't think it's the ideal thing to live with a place as your background, but to embrace it as the foreground of your life. But rather than go too much into that, if you're interested to hear more about that and you've missed those episodes, go to check out my recent episodes about living abroad, expat life, and so on, where I've discussed these a lot. And then also, when it comes to the internet, it's very important to also understand what are the costs and fees for these services and where are they available. But say, for example, here in Italy, you can get 100 gigabytes plus maybe a couple hundred minutes, all the way up to unlimited minutes per month in SMS for anywhere from, say, $5.99 a month to about $9.99 a month, depending on how you organize your contracts. Say, for example, you buy into a certain line and then you transfer that over, you can get some really good deals. This is, what, again, like one of the reasons why I always talk so highly about Iliad. They're not a sponsor, but Iliad, hey, if you're listening, let's talk. I'm always talking about Iliad because having Iliad actually, okay, this might not be the part that they would want to sponsor, but having Iliad actually opens up the door for you to be able to get a lot of really great plans here. The Iliad plans on their own are actually fantastic. The speeds of the internet are not ideal, but especially when we're talking about the price for unlimited minutes within the country, as well as international to a lot of landlines and even to the United States, landline and mobile calls just included. I have to say it's very nice, especially in the case of an emergency, to not be reliant on data, but to be able to make a regular call, because there have been situations in the world where maybe certain services get taken down, or like we just had recently with WhatsApp, Facebook, and Facebook Messenger and the attached services. Like, yeah, you would be cut off from your family, at least through those services. So you have to figure out what are the alternatives, but to be able to have the ability to make an actual call can be huge, but not necessarily a VoIP or a SIP service where you could make a virtual phone. Nice to be able to have something that you can actually make a proper call through. And then also one of the other aspects regarding connectivity in this manner is about what online services are available to you. For example, do you need to have like Amazon deliveries or online deliveries, or do you need to be able to, if you're working from home, say, for example, order food to be delivered? I know for me, there are times when I'll be working a ridiculous amount of hours and I don't have the time to cook for myself or to be able to go out to grab something. So it's actually much more convenient for me to order something and have it brought to me. This doesn't always happen, but from time to time, it's nice to at least have the option. And then also, it's worthwhile understanding how available these things are. That's a little bit more difficult to find out. Like, for example, where I live, delivery times can be absurdly long for food and for these sorts of things if you're ordering through an app. But if you're in a larger city, maybe the delivery speeds might be a little faster. That's the more difficult part to figure out when you're abroad. But another aspect of something that I think is really overlooked, especially for comfort, and this takes me to point six, is about food. Are you even able to eat the local foods? I know for me personally, there are certain parts of the world where I wouldn't be able to eat the local food, but there are other parts of the world where I very much embrace the local food and love it. Maybe even more so than some of the stuff that I grew up with. However, for me, it's always really nice to have at least access to a burger. Once you've lived abroad for long enough, there's nothing like a good burger at the end of a stressful day, a stressful week, whatever it may be. Or maybe you just need some of your ingredients that you have from home. Like, for example, like vanilla extract, that can be a little tricky to get depending on where you are in the world. So it's important to know what are those things that you want, like if you're wanting to bake, or even if you're just wanting something prepared or not prepared, or a soda. Like, I only last year found out that I could get root beer in the town where I live. It's not the best root beer, it's A&W. But hey, if I have a craving for something familiar, I have that option to go get that. Then on to probably one of the most important parts of the whole moving process. And that takes me to point number 7. And that's actually moving itself. That's getting your things to your new location. Or do you want to do that? It's important to decide, how much of your life do you want to bring with you? How much is actually necessary for you to take? There are some people who want to have the ability to take everything from their house where they live in now, or their apartment, whatever it is, and just be able to pick that up and plop it in a new place because it's familiar, it's comfortable. And when you're moving abroad, having comfort is extremely important during those stressful moments. It will make it easier for you on the long run if you can take as much stress away as possible. That's just life in general. But when you're moving abroad, there will be those extremely stressful moments where you're starting to think to yourself, what the hell did you just do? There may be days where you think about that every day. There may be moments where everything's great and then you don't think about it. It's like, eh, was it a good idea to move abroad? Was it not? But the move itself, there can be times where it is less expensive to even from one part of the world to another to actually get a mover to take your things, depending on the type of mover. Like, there's a mover that I've used a number of times during my international and intercontinental moves as well, and family and friends and so on. And it's been great because there have been times where it's been so much less expensive to have a mover than it would be to replace and purchase new furniture in some cases, or even some like a screen or whatever it might be. Or say maybe you just want to go with a minimal amount of things, then you have to think about taking extra suitcases with you. Will you be able to handle 6 suitcases, 5 suitcases, 4 suitcases with you, plus your carry-ons and so on? Is that something that you'll be able to juggle around? Or is that something you even want to juggle around? Because this is something you also have to take into consideration, is the cost of the extra baggage or overweight baggage can be pretty pricey per bag depending on the airline. With most airlines, I would say that's almost a fair fact to stay. But you do have services in the world that can allow you to send a single suitcase to your new location so you don't have to juggle. And it can, in fact, actually be cheaper to do it that way, to just send a single suitcase through a service that would offer that, or even DHL or UPS. DHL and UPS can get a bit pricey. So in that case, even though some of these services that do actually send your suitcase through one of those services, because they have those deals worked out, you actually can end up saving in that way as well. You have to take all of these into account, because even for some people, they just want to go with a backpack, start out fresh, start out new. And there's nothing wrong with that also. It can be really nice to have a fresh, clean, just nice start. But anyway, there's been a lot that I covered in this episode. And if you'd like to hear more, because this is a good portion of what I cover when I'm looking into a place, but if you would like to know more and you'd like a part 2 to this episode, let me know in the comment section below on YouTube, or if you're listening to this as an audio only podcast, let me know on Instagram or through email if you would like that part 2, or feel free to take part in this conversation and let me know down in the comment section below on YouTube, what are some of the things that you look into when you're moving abroad? Anyway, a huge thank you to those of you who help to make content like this possible on a monthly basis through rafaeldifuria.com/Patreon or patreon.com/rafaeldifuria. And for those of you also who've bought the shirts, mugs, onesies, and more, and posters like you see behind me, thank you all so much for being a part of this and supporting these episodes. And also the one-time donations as well through PayPal also make a huge difference. So thank you all so very much. Of course, as always, I'm Rafael Di Furia. Stay safe and healthy out there, and I'll see you all next time. Later.